continue to devote that much time and energy to the Mideast. Nevertheless, Carter continued doggedly to pursue his hopes for a Geneva conference that would somehow include Palestinian representation. Time magazine, in the October 10, 1977, edition reports, "The Palestinian Problem Geneva, US policy is shifting on whether to deal with the PLO. It is obvious to me that there can be no Middle Eastern peace settlement without adequate Palestinian representation." So said President Carter at his Washington press conference, echoing a theme he had stated many times before. But then Carter went a significant step further. "If the Palestine Liberation Organization endorsed United Nations resolutions that implicitly accept Israel's right to exist," he promised, "then we will begin to meet with them and to search for some accommodation and some reasonable approach to the Palestinian question." Arabs hailed the president's statement, Israelis were furious. In Jerusalem's view, Carter was backing away from a long-standing agreement that the US would never deal with the PLO as long as it was committed to the destruction of Israel. More than that, the Israelis detected that they were coming under heavy pressure from their closest ally in the world, an ally that was significantly modifying its policy in the Middle East. The Israeli perception is basically correct. Ever since his Clinton, Mass, call last March for a Palestinian homeland, Jimmy Carter has become more and more convinced that the Palestinian issue is, as President Hafez Assad of Syria calls it, the mother question in the Middle East. Carter also feels that answering that question is of vital importance to America's national interests and the key to a successful resumption of peace negotiations in Geneva, emphasis supplied, notwithstanding the virtual impossibility of a negotiated peace at Geneva, the US still was pushing both sides to the conference table. In a report in the October 24, 1977, issue Newsweek concludes by saying, US officials remained confident that a Geneva conference could still be launched before the end of the year. "We have a 40-60 chance of seeing all the Arab parties accept the working paper more or less unscathed," one top US aide said last week. Experienced Middle East diplomats were less optimistic. They feared that the Day and Carter working paper had disillusioned more militant Arab leaders, persuading them that no US president, regardless of his expressed sympathy for the Arab cause, could withstand pressure from a powerful pro-Israel lobby. Consequently, Carter may have to do a lot more persuading before Arabs and Israelis sit down together at Geneva, emphasis supplied, in an article in the Los Angeles Times entitled "The Fairy Tale Status of US-Israeli Ties." Ari Lover Eliyev, a member of the Israeli parliament, offers some perceptive observations after Secretary of State Vance's recent visit to Israel. "I rose to deliver a speech to the Knesset. Opening a volume of Hans Christian Andersen fables, I read aloud to my colleagues the well-known story that this fairy tale, unfortunately, reflects the status of current US-Israel relations. Because both the Israeli and American governments want fervently to believe that their mutual interests are growing ever greater and that peace in the Mideast is looming ever closer, they pretend it is so, just as the emperor's subjects pretended that he was arrayed in expensive finery. But behind the outward trappings of mutual respect and goodwill exhibited by government officials, in flattering eulogies and carefully worded proclamations of optimism, stands the all too naked truth. The policies of Prime Minister Begin and his liquored party have headed Israel on a collision course not only with America, but with the Arabs and the rest of the world as well." Emphasis supplied, earlier in the Carter administration, a red alert had been flashed to Israel and to the Jewish community in America. Carter had been heard to say that the Palestinians had some legitimate rights, and Brzezinski had said that the US has a direct interest in the outcome of the Middle East conflict and had a legitimate right to exercise its own leverage with Israel and the Arabs for the benefit of its readers, the October 11, 1977 edition of the Jerusalem Post explained this latest development, and goes on to reassure its readers that there is no cause for concern to Israel. But should we be all that surprised by the current tilt in US policy? Maybe not. According to one respected Washington observer of the IL Kennan, the honorary chairman of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, pointed out some days ago that the first years of new administrations in Washington have usually proved to be difficult ones for Israel. Testifying before a Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee, Kennan said that a review of U.S. policy in the Middle East reveals a recurrent quadrennial exercise, emphasis supplied, behind the U.S. administration's zealousness is a rosy report on Arab intentions which Vance brought back from his August trip to the Middle East. His message was clear: the Arab states are ready to sign peace treaties with Israel in exchange for a return essentially to the pre-1967 lines and the creation of a Palestinian entity of one type or another on the West Bank. Thus, the US has a historic opportunity to achieve peace, an opportunity that must not be missed. As mentioned above, the first years of new administrations have traditionally seen new US peace initiatives in the Middle East. Re-election time is still 3 years away. The Begin government is clearly trying to avoid such a split with Washington. But the Carter administration at this stage may feel that it can risk some strains with Israel in order to promote the Geneva peace talks. If historical experience is anything to go by, the president and his advisors will soon learn that the domestic price is too high to pay. An organized, articulate, and vocal interest group operating in America's democratic system can cause the executive branch of government a lot of headaches if aroused, as happened last week after the Vance Gromyko statement, emphasis supplied. During the balance of 1977, the Carter administration never ceased its efforts to reconvene a Geneva conference, including an offer to the Soviet Union to resume its former position as co-chairman. This caused an almost hysterical response from Israel. In the meantime, however, events in Israel were developing which would play a critical role in later peace negotiations. The Likud victory had opened the floodgates to the extremist religious parties who had supported the Likud and claimed to believe, as Begin does, that the West Bank and Gaza are sacred territories, part of Eretz Israel, and that not a foot of it can be bargained away. The October 17th, 1977, edition of US News and World Report contains the following report, datalined Nablus, and entitled Israel is in no mood to give up anything, and is quoted in part below. Here on the west bank of the Jordan River, President Carter faces his toughest task in mediating an Arab-Israeli peace, persuading Israel to turn over this land to the Palestinians. Israel is in no mood to give up anything to anybody. Instead, Israelis are digging in everywhere on the West Bank and on the other Arab territories seized in the 1967 Mideast War. From the Golan Heights, Israeli settlements march down the length of the West Bank and into the Sinai Desert. They range in size from tiny farming villages to huge apartment complexes on the Arab side of Jerusalem. There are 46 settlements on the West Bank alone. In all, about 55,000 Jews live on land that belonged to the Arabs before 1967. Push by Gush Emunim. Now, an ultra-nationalist religious group named Gush Emunim Bloc of the Faithful is urging Prime Minister Menachem Begin to permit even more Israeli towns in occupied areas. Begin shared Gush Emunim's convictions that the West Bank and Gaza Strip are part of the biblical Jewish homeland, and that Israelis should be free to settle anywhere in the regions. Hostility toward Israelis is evident in Arab towns. Cars with Israeli plates often are stoned, and military officials caution Jewish visitors to carry guns. It's not uncommon to see Israelis on the West Bank riding bicycles with machine guns strapped to their backs. Despite the hostility and danger, the debate in Israel is not over whether to settle the occupied territories, but how fast to proceed with new towns. Even into crowded Hebron itself. They say the ancient city, an important Jewish center in biblical times, should belong to Jews, not Arabs. Emphasis supplied. A critical analysis of the then state of American Middle East diplomacy was published in the Los Angeles Times, written by Edward R. F. Sheehan, a research fellow at Harvard Center for International Affairs. His article entitled, Is Carter Counting on a Geneva Miracle, is quoted below. U.S. policy in the Middle East has assumed dreamlike dimensions. There exists an almost phantasmagoric contradiction between American theory and practice in the Arab-Israeli conflict. The theory, pronounced consistently by President Carter since he took office, is commendable. He has spoken lucidly of Israeli withdrawal to the 1967 frontiers and the creation of a Palestinian homeland in exchange for which the Arabs must confer full peace on Israel. Already, To an extent, few of us thought possible only